thank you very much for coming again. And I would like to stress this one. Some of the things may not be as crystal clear as it should be today. Let's ask questions, and we'll still have another bite, because we should not be seen as an event. It should be a process. We can have joined the team. We'll be including on our support staff to assist us with a number of things, so that we're in a better position to execute our teaching to the best of our ability. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. There's an agenda for the day. I hope we all have the agenda. And I think just proceed on the basis of this agenda, not unless there is any opposition. I don't think so. Do you have any apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members.
Yes.
Two apologies from Basim Tlanguini. There's the only one. There's the only one. Can you check? Oh, and Mr. Kwangwa. Same one now.
Thank you so much. He says it's two apologies minus one. Then you add the plus one. Apologies are noted. We are now on agenda item number 3. The time that we put is set from 10 to 1800 hours. But I don't think we should be measured on the time that we spend here. We should go measured on the output. So they call it output management, not input management. If we are efficient with our time without compromising anything, especially questions, I think questions they need to be concise and direct, so that we get the direct answer and so on. Comments are allowed, and commenting is a comment. But then questions so that we allow people to respond to the direct questions and get direct answers. So, welcome, Honorable Peter. No problem. I was just starting on item number 3, which is the main business of the day. I'll allow the presentation from our support staff. Okay, go ahead. Don't forget again to introduce yourself. And I did just it the other day, so we keep on asking you to introduce yourself. Thank you. Just before that, I know that yesterday we have been allowed to spend more time with the department. As you said, we sit down and identify time so that we have got a proper workshop with them. I think another thing that was complaining as far as members are concerned was that we were two committees, so the time was quite limited. Okay, I'll allow the colleagues to take us through their presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members. Today we'll just have a discussion and a conversation with honorable members about the role of the committee. So basically the presentation was the three parts. The first one will focus on the role of the committee in terms of its mandate, functions, the key processes, the key stakeholders that we work with, the key frameworks and instruments that we rely on, and the measures of work. And then the second presentation will focus on the rules that are in the work of the committee that will be presented by the committee secretary. The first presentation about the rules is presented by the committee administrator. And the last one will focus on the legacy report, so that members will have an understanding of what the speed administration forward with and some of the outstanding issues that the committee may want to follow up on. Thank you very much, Chair and members. So the first presentation, which is by myself, My name is Musa Zamisa, a researcher to this committee. I honorable member, I've been with this committee for the past 8 years, and I really enjoyed the relationship with members, and I'm looking forward to another great. And this morning I had a conversation with one of the members, and I was telling him about how excited I was after attending this meeting. You could hardly say that this is a committee of new members. The level of engagement that is crashing with National Treasury, you could hardly tell. So this was very exciting. So I hope going forward we'll also, as a support staff, make sure that members are really empowered and they really engage, because at the end of the day, it's about the people of our country. So in terms of this presentation, now I've introduced myself and I forgot about my colleagues.
Morning, Jackson. Morning, my own members. My name is Peran Jomo. I've been with this committee since 2008, when it was still called Joint Budget Committee, where the two houses had one committee to look into the budget, combined with NOP as well as the NA. I'm doing the budget presentation, as my colleague has said, but one of the things that we will also be teasing out are some of the issues that we raised yesterday in the Central Ghana, where we may need to highlight and share some more light on those things. And my colleague has said that the engagement yesterday, which was very robust and exciting, it's a very positive feedback, a very positive note. We hope that the honorable members will continue in that particular spirit, and we as support staff will do our utmost best to support the honorable members. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Darren Irons. I've been serving on this committee since the beginning of 2011. I also, as a committee secretary, I also assisted Parliament with the Joint Standing Committee on the Financial Management of Parliament since its inception, but now I'm focusing on the Appropriations Committee, and I'm still awaiting the appointment of the Session Committee Secretary, which is imminent. Thank you.
Thank you. So in terms of the outline of the presentation, the first presentation will focus on the establishment of the committee and its mandate in terms of the legislation. And then the second part will focus on the unique features of this committee. What makes this appropriation committee the appropriation committee? What's so special about it? And then a little bit of history. And then we'll also focus on the main focus of the committee in the budget side. And then the odd point would be the key focal points of the committee in the legislative budget process. Once the budget is tabled in Parliament, where do we focus on as the appropriation committee? And then we'll also focus on the main legal instruments, the institutional framework, as well as the partners, both within and outside Parliament, partners that we work with. And then we'll just touch on the key questions that drive the work of the committee. What are the overarching questions that this committee focuses on once the budget is tabled, and then we oversee the Department of Education, National Treasury. And then the last process would be just an illustration of how the budget process in Parliament unfolds overall. So we have a visual description of how the process takes place. Okay. In terms of the establishment and mandate of the committee, honorable members, this committee was established. It was established in 2009,
through the passing of the Manifest Amendment Procedures and Related Matters Act. To shorten the name of the legislation is referred to as the Manifest Act, but in full it's called the Manifest Amendment Procedures and Related Matters Act. There's a very rich history suggesting the numbers around this act in 2009, because prior to this act, the Constitution in Section 77, Subsection 3, gave Parliament the power to amend Mansfield, which is the Bible. But it also made the Constitution to say, for Parliament to be able to amend the budget, there must be an act. Parliament must pass an act which will prescribe the procedure for amending the budget. So prior to 2009, that act was not in place. So despite the Constitution giving Parliament the power to amend the budget, Parliament could not do so in the absence of an act that gives effect to that clause in the Constitution. So that left a big gap in terms of the effectiveness of Parliament, because this is when Parliament was called a rubber stamping body when it comes to the budget, because it could engage on the allocations that are tabled by National Treasury and hold public hearings and invite the public. But at the end of the day, it could not make any changes, even if it is agreed with the proposal tabled by National Treasury. Because when the budget is tabled in the House, it's still a proposal from the executive. Parliament is the final arbiter. Hence, this is called the power of the test. The power of the test lies with Parliament. Parliament elected the final decision. But in the absence of that act, Parliament could not do anything. So Parliament really fought for this power. So finally in 2009, the act was put in place. Parliament legislated it in principle, now could amend the budget, but certain processes needed to be put in place and certain committees that Mr. Lombardi will talk about this, because for you to amend the budget, it's a very technical exercise, it's a very delicate exercise. If mistakes happen, there could be significant challenges in the economy. You know, so you must have capacity to amend the budget, you must be on par, relatively speaking, with the executive, because the executive has got the know-how, especially the National Treasury. I mean, they've got three more than 200 support staff who put together the budget. So Parliament must also be on par with the executive when we engage with the card. When we say this must go there, you must understand the implications and so on and so forth. So the issue that we'll talk about later, the Parliamentary Budget Office, that the structure that has to be put in place in order to advance these committees for taking over the budget. So that's a bit of history. But specifically in the Act, it is Section 4, Subsection 3 that creates this committee. As we know, there are four committees that are created by the Act. The one is the Finance Committee, both in the NCOP and the NA. The one in the NA is called the Standing Committee on Appropriations. The other one in the NCOP is called the Senate Committee on Appropriations, on Finance. And then we have two appropriation committees as well. One is the NCOP, one is the NA, and one is the NCOP. So we are the one in the NA called the Standing Committee on Appropriations. And the NCOP is the one that is called the Senate Committee on Appropriations. How do we differentiate between these committees? To simplify it, the finance committees, because the budget is called two sides, if you can simplify it, it's the finance and the spending. What do you want to spend and how you going to finance it? And then you can have issues about the different, whether it's a surplus and a deficit, like that. So the ones in the finance, they focus on the finance side of the budget. The appropriation one focus on the spending side of the budget in simple terms. So we focus on the spending side of the budget. So in terms of this committee, its powers and functions, which is stated in the Act, subsection Section 4, Subsection 3, it derives powers and functions from the Constitution, the Money Bills Act, the Standing Rules, and the House Resolution. And these powers and functions include considering and reporting on spending issues. As I said, ours is only the expenditure side. The spending issues is the amendment to the Division of Revenue Bill. I will explain all these bills. And then the appropriation bill, the supplementary appropriation bill, the adjustment appropriation bill, and then the mid-term term budget policy statement, we'll talk about it later. And then the recommendations of the Financial and Fiscal Commission. So by law, we must consider and report on the recommendations of the FSC. They will come later and explain in detail, but as we go along, we'll talk about that. And then the reports on actual expenditure are published by the National Treasury. We'll talk about that later. It's normally referred to as Section 82 report. The fourth quarter that we were discussing yesterday is changed. And this is the report on actual expenditure. It's called Section 82 report because it is published in terms of Section 82 of the Public Finance Management Act. But we'll talk about it later. And then we must also consider and report on any other related matters which are set out in the Act. So this is what is stipulated in the Act. But as we go on in the presentation, we will unpack all the sections. So, what are the unique features of the standing committee appropriation? The first one, when I discuss, I normally say, this committee deals with the most important instrument, policy instrument in the hands of government, which is the budget. And you know, Chairperson, the budget carries out the dreams, hopes and aspirations of the people. It is through the budget that government is able to fund priority programs, especially those that are accepted in the National Development Plan. As you know, members, if it is not budgeted for, it's not a priority. Even if the president outlines the priorities of government in the financial year or during the administration, you have to go to the budget and say, are these priorities funded? If you don't see any allocation to the priorities that were outlined by the president, that's when you must stand in the house and say, but you said these are the priorities. But when you look at the budget or in the budget, you don't see any allocation in that effect. So the budget is the most important policy instrument. I normally say, through effective budget allocation and implementation, government could eliminate poverty and inequality, which those are key objectives of the NDP. When you open the NDP, it states categorically that the objective of the NDP is to eliminate the inequality and poverty, obviously through job creation and expanding the economy. So everything starts with the budget. If the budget does not really support these objectives, then there's a problem. But if the budget really is aligned to these key priorities and implemented accordingly, so this committee really, even if it is the right that are enshrined in the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, in the Bill of Rights, I think the Constitution says the state must take progressive measures to realize these rights within available resources for them to survive the most important policy instrument. But the second point is that this committee has an overarching mandate. It's simply cut across. It's cut across departments on 40 budget goals. As we heard yesterday, it's about 300 entities that this committee basically oversees, because when you appropriate to this committee, then you must follow the mandate, but we'll discuss those issues later. Even in terms of the 3 spheres of government, because if you also consider the reports on the Division of Revenue Bill, the Division of Revenue Bill allocates money to all the 3 spheres of government. You must also monitor the use of those monies that were allocated to these 3 spheres of government. So demanded a very huge novelty when we present in different platforms. It's sort of a mega committee, in a sense. It demanded very huge. But as we discussed earlier, Chair, in the past, you can be lost in the detail if you don't come up with a very clear plan on where to focus, how and why. Because demand is so huge. You know, the time, so I think when we discuss time frames in the health are all constraining, you know, the members can only do so much. So far, so we discuss all those issues. But demand is so huge. Even when you look at in other countries, such as the United States, the standing committee of profession members, for 15 members, and divided into subcommittees focusing on different strategic areas. It's subcommittees and sub-chapters. You know, that's how huge the money of the committee. And in those committees, each member has a special, you know, that's how significant. But also it's based on their context. Our context is different. But in future, I see the committee growing. So we can only grow from strength to strength. And then the last point that I would like to raise here is that the committee, this is very heavy, this is very unique as well. One of the few committees that are legislated. So these functions and powers are prescribed in an act of parliament. So if you don't comply with what the committee wants you to do, so there are legal implications. Also, the committee must comply with certain processes. There's a sequence of how to do things, when to do things, and why. And if you don't follow the sequence as prescribed in the act, things will be said to be unprocedural, and you may have to be through the process. And sometimes you can even be taken to court, because even the issue of public participation, it is a requirement in the act. So you can't have any bill without inviting the public to come. So it's a very sensitive matter. And the other one is a mega committee. It has a coordinating and a facilitatory role. Kind of coordinate the work of different committees. Because when, for instance, when we talk of amendments, when you amend the budget, you must take from somewhere. So you may take a budget from health and into education. But you can't just do that without consulting with the affected minister. So you must consult. So there must be a coordination. You must consult the Minister of Finance. And there are specific requirements in the airport. If you propose amendments, how many days must be given to the Minister of Finance to respond to those proposed amendments and so on and so forth? Also, within Parliament, if you propose certain amendments, because the budget of a particular department is affected. And there's a portfolio committee which oversees that department. So you must also consult with the chairperson of that portfolio committee. So even also because portfolio committees can also propose amendments during the budget vote process. But you can't do it alone, they must come and lobby this committee. So it has a serious mandate in terms of coordinating and facilitating the budget process. And then the main focus of this committee and the budget society, as you can see in this illustration, because the budget process, I think, as members, for all stages in society, we have the drafting stage, or it's called formulation, the legislative, also called approval, the execution, also called the implementation stage, and then the final one, which is the auditing stage, where you can performance outcomes and financial statements. So our focus is mainly during the legislative stage and the execution stage. I'll say why. The first point, Chair, is that the drafting stage, I normally say it's the sole preserve of the executive. It's the executive that prepares the budget. So Parliament really does not get involved in those processes. I think when we have a workshop in National Treasury, they will explain how they go about doing this, and it takes about 18 months. So, but
you know, they are always informal ways of influencing the process of understanding the process run by the advocacy. And then we have the, now the legislative state, that's where we focus on when the budget is tabled, because it must be first tabled in Parliament. This is where these committees, the four Finance and Appropriations Committee, they adopt the fiscal framework, approve money bills, such as the appropriations bill, and also approve the division of revenue bill. In some technical terms, this is called the ex-ante stage. That is before the implementation. So that is, this is just a summary link from the capacity talk. And then the, in the executive stage, that's where this committee conducts in-year monitoring and oversight over the advocacy. We use different instruments. That's where we follow the mandate we appropriated. And then the only thing of the evaluation, I'll explain why I say we use information there, but not really our key focus. Because this is the year-end evaluation of the expenditure and performance outcome. Then the agency tables the annual reports and annual financial statements. It's mainly the scope that really gets involved in this process. But we also use the annual reports for the purposes of oversight. But our focus is only on those two stages mainly. And then the key focus areas during the legislative stage, once the budget is tabled in Parliament in February, what is our key focus as appropriation relative to the other two finance committees in the NA and OP? And then I'll explain their processes in the end. Because first, the minister will come, the minister to give a background. Before even the minister came on the budget, this committee is given a privilege to go into a session called the lock-up session. We go and sit, we are given a privilege, members are given a privilege to see these documents, the budget speech, all the documents that inform the budget before the minister delivers the speech in the house later at, I think, at 2 p.m. traditionally. So at 9, members will go and have a going through all these documents, but we are not allowed to come out because we might.
You are still not allowed to use the cell phone to signal switch off because the minister is one must present the budget. Otherwise you find others presenting the budget before the minister. So you have to give members the privilege of it. Because shortly after the budget, we'll have the media coming and asking for interviews, you know. So if you have that space, by the time the minister is done, you are able to, you know, give the media the position of Parliament and the committee around the budget. So it's mainly the chairperson, but the chairperson,
yeah,
you know.
We
understand. Yeah. So when we talk of the fiscal framework, honorable members, it's not a separate bill per se that the appropriation bill, because the fiscal framework is like the framework of the budget. That's what we adopt first in Parliament, but that's the role of the Finance Committee. Because the fiscal framework tells you what, how much does government want to spend and spend on, and how does it plan to finance that? So we have the expenditure and the revenue generation. How are we going to generate the money to spend? And then the difference there is the expenditure is bigger than what the anticipated revenue, then you have a budget deficit. But if the revenue is bigger than what you anticipate to spend on, then you have a surplus. You know, current, I think the tripartite deficit is around 4.5%. And then how are you going to find the deficit? That's why you hear about debt, because you must go and borrow. Whether you borrow outside or within the country, so there are implications and so on. So those terms are how they come. It's a fiscal framework. And then we have macroeconomic policy assumptions that underpin the fiscal framework. But later, when the other stakeholders discuss their going to the issue. So the fiscal framework and macroeconomic policy assumption, you'll find them in this document called the budget review. So that's where you find the fiscal framework. And then once the fiscal framework has been adopted by the full finance committee, and it must be adopted within 16 days from the taking of the budget, that's when the time frames come in the end. Strictly within 16 days. And then within those 16 days, there are consultations, because if you propose amendments, you must give minister a certain number of days to respond, and so on and so forth. But those are details which the group wants. And then after this agreement has been adopted, that's where we come in now, as you can see, there is the division of revenue, which is provided for in terms of section 214 of the Constitution, the equitable division of revenue across the two spheres of government. That's where we come in as the two appropriation committees. So this bill will be referred to this committee. We go through it, we consider it, we invite the public to come and engage, but the Constitution also says we must invite organized local government, which is BALCA. Section 214 of the Constitution is very specific. We cannot approve the division of revenue without involving BALCA, because BALCA represents the interests of different municipalities that then be affected in the process, so they must represent different municipalities. So it's given to us, and then we must also invite the FSC, the party FSC, because they are focusing on the division of revenue, because intercoming taxes calculation. So the process is that it's referred to us, referred by the Speaker, and then we process it, and then we recommend it to the House. After that, it is referred to the House Sister Committee and to the other Appropriations Committee. Also, I must emphasize this, Chair, we don't have enough time with the decision of revenue bill. Our main bill is the Appropriations Bill, as you can see, it also informs the name of the committee, Appropriation Committee, the Appropriation Bill. Our main focus is on the Appropriation Bill. We don't have enough time. The NCOP that really goes into details with the division of revenue bill, because the NCOP represents the different provinces, the communities, and so on and so forth. So they must also go to provinces and get a mandate from each province and so on and so forth. So they have enough time, and they really have to go through this. In fact, that is what we normally say, because in the past, there would be instances where we kind of even duplicate each other with the NCOP, you know. So we try to emphasize that ours mainly as national. Theirs mainly as the two sub-national spheres of government. But by actually must go to it. And then this division of revenue must be approved 85 days from the adoption of the fiscal framework. So first, the fiscal framework, once they are done with the fiscal framework, it's the division of revenue bill, but it's 35 days. And then once they are done with the division of revenue, then there is the appropriation bill, which is what we are dealing with at this point. So as we are sitting in this parliament, already we have adopted the division of revenue bill. It was adopted during the 8th parliament. That is why the committee now is dealing with the appropriation bill. And the appropriation bill really we have about 4 months, because it says it must be passed within 4 months after the start of the financial year. So by end of July this year is appropriation bill, and it's in the air, you can't go beyond this 4 months. So that's what we are busy with. That's our flagship bill that must really. So very important, and it's allocation of money to all major departments, but as you know, within those allocations there are transfers to different spheres of government, also to different entities. So it's a very important bill. I'm sure Mr. Number One to have something.
To the permission to share just on that input, I wanted to also add certain things that might be very much important for honorable members to start jacking away as they do their work. The difference between the two bills is conferred in the Constitution. the appropriations here is a section in certain year which does not affect provinces. That is why it is passed here in the National Assembly, and it takes National Assembly 4 months to run with it, whereas the NCOP will pass it in concurrent with the National Assembly. That's why the NCOP will not run any public hearings in that year, will not do any other except writing a report. And that's why the NCOP will jointly do the hearings and some activities as we are proceeding with this bill, because they, once you have passed it, they must do the concurrent report, which is a one pager or a one paragraph. However, the Division of Revenue Bill, Intersection 76 Bill in the Constitution, which affects the provinces, that is why you are only given 11 days to run with it. In the past, before the review of this Act, you were given 9 days. Overall, time frame of process development is 35 days, right? But in that 35 days, the NA committee has got only 11 days to process it, then pass it to the National Council of Provinces to run with it, as we call it, voluntary, point provinces, three provinces, provinces running from participation processes, and send mandate and fund mandate to the NCOP for the election. Thank you so much.
Yes, in the log demonstration, members, I showed you the budget review, which contains just the overall cost. Even the summary of the division of the you find almost everything here, but it took us so much here and everything. And then the division of revenue bill, this is how it looks like. And then the appropriation bill, the very smallish part, in terms of the details, because it tells you how much goes to each department and in terms of the economic application. But the details will be in this one, the bigger one. You will see how the department performed in the past 6 months, and then you see the allocations over the MCF, and then the plans, the progress. So you have the details here. It's called the estimate of operational expenditure. Normally referred to as the ENT. And then these are the key. Sometimes we may have a special appropriation bill for special purposes. For instance, when the special fund investment to be given to an entity like ESCOM, sometimes this is done through a special appropriation bill. Sometimes we have a supplementary appropriation bill to supplement if there is a need to join between the appropriation and the adjustments in October. You may have to supplement. But these are the key, these are the ones that you would really see in that situation. And then appropriation bill. So just to finish there, the Minister of Finance in his budget, which documents that we could say of all those documents that you are having.
If I may come in, the Minister of Finance was in the local commission, which is the president of the Secretary of Health. When you come in there, you will find a pile of different documents. One will be the pile of appropriation bills, which you will need to progress with. The second document will be the estimated internal expenditure that Michael just spoken about. You read that document together with this, because what is in the bill is a summary of what is here. This is where each and every department details what is in. But for you, for the department to utilize whatever is here, you must pass this bill into law. That's why when you read the truth, you would have to read all the documents so that it will make sense. So the second document, the third document will be the division of the revenue bill, which divides the resources among the citizens of government. We often refer to this document as a vertical allocation of resources from the national, provincial, and local, or from local, provincial, and national. Whereas the appropriations bill is a horizontal allocation of resources, and allocated nationally. So this is the third document. The budget speech sometimes gets the bubble. During the local session, sometimes it's there,
The other document would be your revenue proposals that the minister will be sending on the day. The last document is the budget review, which contains your fiscal framework, which is the envelope that we've spoken about. So you have revenues that have been generated, that have been taken into the budget, and your total expenditure, which this committee will have to pass through the appropriations bill. And that budget review also gives you a sense of how the state that cost look like, your deficit, issues of the deficit, your macroeconomic framework, as Mr. Ross talked about, your employment projections, your GDP projections, and so forth and so forth. But your main focus is on expenditure charges in that particular document.
Oh, maybe, or
I have an open question, and that's what I saw that you were looking for, that you don't complete the part. You definitely open up for questions, that's not the question.
Yes, but also just to emphasize before I leave this slide, the fact that during the local session, as is approached down, we make sure that we are available, because we must go through the document as possible, and then we go through the checklisting, the review checklisting, the summary of what is in the budget, in addition to what the checklisting has picked up, and also the members, to highlight these are the key issues, and the key issues. So if you are asked to come and give an interview already, so kind of the preparation work, we do it even during the local session, the support work to come in. So that, and then Parliament has the power to amend all these things. You can amend the fiscal framework, you can reject it, you can accept it. Those are the powers that Parliament has. But there are sequences to be followed, there are processes that have to be followed, and there are conditions and considerations. If you do this, you must be cognizant of the economy, the mandate of the department, and so on and so forth. So it's not an easy exercise. This is why it's not something that has really been done, I think the United States, Canada, those are the countries that really amend, but our context is different, for instance, from the United States. Not as a serial, our work is more cooperative. The Constitution Chapter 3 speaks of cooperative government. So it's not only one objective that we're getting, even though there's a separation of power, but we cooperate. So that's why we work, in a harmonious relationship, even as it happens with national treasure. But in the United States, the case is very different. I think it's involved by their electoral system, their government, their presidential system, their direct democracy. So that's why I think it happened 2 years ago when there was a standoff, the budget could not pass. So the state could not function because the two houses could not agree and so on and so forth. So, but those are the things that the cross country when we, for example, we have to identify that source for members to go and learn about processes in other countries. So we have those, that is, we have those discussions. Here we are talking. And I was talking to my colleagues, I'm very worried that we had a discussion about this. So my biggest worry is that, this COVID has traveled to quite a number of countries, and the countries that have got best practices, like the US, Canada, Uganda, Kenya, Germany, Switzerland. So we are ready, I'm starting to run out of options, but we'll dig deeper, because administratively sometimes they don't want to approve the same country, but something that could be discussed because it's new members at the end of the day. But there's a discussion for another thing. And then, connected here, we'll pass because we've got two other presentations. So, this is a summary of key legal and institutional frameworks as well as stakeholders and the operational instruments. So, the key legal frameworks, as you know, is the Constitution. Any act that is inconsistent with the Constitution is null and void. So these are the key sections that inform the budget, the work of Parliament in the budget, and by implication the work of this committee in the budget process. Darren talk about the rules, he will explain these different sections. Maybe I can just highlight it just as I'm referring to, only to define parliament, the composition of parliament in SOP. I think 43 and 44 is really the legislative power of the National Assembly, I think, and the National. And then the most important one is section 55. It says parliament has the power to accept, amend, or reject any legislation brought before it. And parliament can initiate any law, but it is a qualification except for money bills. Money bills, those are the things that to appropriate that we deal with. So this parliament cannot initiate those things. It's only the Minister of Finance that is in the constitution. And then section 213 is really the power of the purse. It talks about, it defines national revenue funds, where, you know, the money that is collected by national government is put sort of a, you know, a purse for the state. And that's what we do, the parliament has the power of the purse. We have the power of the national revenue fund. Yes, managed by treasury, but the parliament receives the final arbiter of that purse. So there's money that is in the national revenue fund. But money can only be released from that national revenue fund through an act, an appropriation act of parliament. So that's where the appropriation emanates from, or through a direct charge. And then section 214 is the division of revenue bill. The most important one, section 215, it basically defines the budget and the principles underpinning the budget. That the budget must promote efficiency, equity, and the effective management of the economy and the public sector. Those are key principles, and those should also check the design when we engage with national treasury around the budget. Does this appropriation bill promote equity, efficiency, and effective management of the economy and the public sector? And then OMAS, the economic classification, section 214. And then section 77 defines money bills. It's a bill that appropriates money, abolishes taxes, or installs white taxes, you know. So that's what an appropriation bill. And then I spoke about section 77, that's section 3, which talks about the need for an act of parliament to prescribe the procedure for amending the budget that informs the Manipulus Act. And then the other instrument is the Manipulus Act we talked about, and the other instrument is the oversight and accountability model. I think Darren, yeah, is one that I don't know, you need to let us know that oversight and accountability model, I think we should speculate because it's sort of a kind of framework for oversight and accountability, how oversight. There's one document that members have said, we also define some of the terms that inform oversight and accountability, giving sort of some history, sort of a guided document, and then NA rules which Darren will talk about later. And then the key institutional framework here, I'm talking about our partners internally within parliament. Obviously, the parliamentary committees, we must work, I think, Honorable Eunice Karen will also remind that it's very important to meet with control committees because they've got very important knowledge around sectoral issues because you know the budget. You can't talk about policy without talking about the budget because policy is implemented through the budget. And you can't talk about the budget without talking about policy. So they talk to each other. So it's always better if we sit together. But sometimes because of creation programs, the opportunity is not there. So we meet together, even with hope and so on. So those are the partners. And then the parliamentary budget office, they will come later and explain their mandate. But I explained that we were established specifically for these four committees. For now, maybe if they expand, they will also assist for all the select committees and their four committees. But for now, they are dedicated to these four committees. Sometimes we even commission research, because the researchers mostly must be here, but at some point this committee will want detailed research with this time. and then sometimes we commission the PTO, and then we have the research unit. I represent the research unit. We have about 50 researchers, each committee master the researcher. Sometimes we take the work that is done by those researchers if it is relevant to our committee, not just this. So in terms of collaboration, we as the support staff make sure that we infuse the work of other committees if it's relevant to the committee. And then we have the committee section. My colleagues are representing the committee section, the committee secretary, coordinator, advisor, committee assistant, and so on. And then the legal section, I think they will come later, be arranged for the communication unit, there must be a communication office, I will make sure that the work of the committee is profiled, and because the public must know what is happening in Parliament. Sometimes the federal media will not do that, or maybe they will take what they want to take, but there must be someone within Parliament who will really reflect what is happening here. Because sometimes I worry when people, when they talk about Parliament, only what they do on TV, mainly in the Parliament, they forget there's a lot of work that goes through the committee, there's a lot of work that members do. So this is what this communication is supposed to do. And then we have the public education unit, you know, they run programs like taking Parliament for the people. When we have our own sharing, we spoke about the importance of educating the public about the budget process. So sometimes the public does not come in the presentation because they don't know much, especially about the budget. So we work closely with this public education unit because they've got specialized people around the area, former teachers and so on. And then we have the language section. When we have public education session, our people, they need different languages. So we must have interpreters and so on and so forth. And then the public relations start to train. And then our key partners outside, personal, the Auditor General, FSC, SARDA, HSRC, Public Service Commission, SSA is very key. I think when we do our planning session, SSA must be there. And then National Treasury, key partner, and then civil society organization, as I said, it's by law that we must involve them, but they add to a lot of value. And then you've got labor, and you've got the business community, academia, and I think there's a representative of parliamentary monitoring group here, PMG. They play a very huge role because they document all these meetings. For instance, members are interested to know what has this committee been doing in the previous term or other terms and so on and so forth. And forth. When you go to the website of the PMG, you get the minutes, you know, comprehensive and everything, and the documents and everything. So they are our key stakeholders, and then we meet the general public. And then in terms of operational instruments, obviously the Constitution, the National Development Plan, and the medium-term strategy framework, everything must inform the NDP, everything must flow. Now, the President said, we must make sure that the NDP is at the center of government performance now. We have left, I think, for 10 years now only. And those goals and the, you know, in certain areas, there's a huge gap. You know, the economy is supposed to be growing at 5.2% per annum. You know, we are below, it's been below 2% for the past 4, 5 years, and we must eliminate unemployment. So, by 2030, I think NDP says unemployment must be at 6%. Current, I think, 27.6 there. Yes. So those are key issues. Inequality, unfortunately, at this point, we are the most unequal society in the world. I think the Gini coefficient, which is the measure of inequality, ours is 0.68. And if we are one, it means that the most unequal society. So we are aging growth on that side. So that's why the President was saying we must work hard. If it is zero, we are the most equal society. I don't know what two extremes exist in the world, but ours is, that's why the NDP is really. And then we have the fauna, because the fauna outlines the problem of action, you know, so we must make sure we follow the fauna. And then
can I interrupt? It's good to keep my hear this, but I'm also feeling the same. It's called here, and
we are awake. Let's not get awake by a cold. Room temperature is about 22-23.
And then after the, and then we have the chicken is that our main instrument, the Intergovernmental Calculations Act, it's really well routine with the episode. But it's not mainly, I think as researchers, but it's not something that members should really worry about it. And then I spoke about the Section 82 report, PFMA, which is something you dealt with when you dealt with the fourth quarter. On a quarterly basis, Treasury publishes this document, but they produce a special report to the committee to give you a sense of how departments have spent in the first quarter, in the second quarter, and the third quarter. And that's what we as a support staff, especially the professor, use to, you know, do an analysis, give members of the committee that which departments are outliers, not doing well, which ones are not doing well, and then any support to be seen in the public hearing. And then annual report, budget documents, strategic plan with annual performance plan, and then some research reports, whether it's welfare, it's the IMF, you know, economic research bureau, and then for the good work as well. And then we have statistical reports, like especially from SFA, you know, General Household Survey, which tells us how are we doing in terms of the provision of basic services. So we also need those documents, because when we need to, this department of water, because you are giving this budget. Actually, for the past 10 years, we've been giving so much budget, but now the general households are so confident, our people don't have clean water, and so on and so forth. So we use those documents so that we have a broader perspective into the issues. So that's the summary. And then, the key driving questions on the budget. Those are the questions that you can ask at any given day. The first one is actually aligning the key policy and imperatives and strategic goals. For instance, if the budget aligns with the NDP, that has been a huge question. It's very important when departments put together their strategic plans and annual performance plans. Must talk to the NDP, otherwise, because if you plan to fail, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail, you start with the plan. So the alignment, the NDP is aligned with the NDP, is aligned with the solar priority, is aligned with the sustainable development goals. If there's no alignment, really, we can't even talk about anything else. And also, we spoke about Section 215 to say the budget must promote effective management of the economy. So, does this budget facilitate economic growth? How? In which areas? Which programs? And so on. Those are sort of questions. How does it facilitate job creation? You know, that's the most pressing matter in South Africa. That affects unemployment, especially youth unemployment. You know, I think the 5% 2.2% was about 50%. Does it address poverty and inequality? Those are key objectives of the NDP. That's where we want to be, we want to take those two. So even a department must indicate in whatever budget you are giving, how are you navigating around this issue? Does it prioritize rural communities? Issues of gender empowerment. You know, so we must have gender lenses. People with disabilities align with other priorities that to fall into present societal challenges. You know, those are challenges that you see immediately on TV when people are rioting over this and that. So we need to department that respond to those issues. I think I heard most of those questions about children when they go to school, they must cross their river and all those things, because there's no proper bridges and roads and so on and so forth. That man is taken from 9 tall to 12 from 2. from Nanford to Toronto. Those are the questions. Therefore, I'm quite excited yesterday. Really reinforcing the sense that the budget is not about numbers and statistics, it's about the people. And then the second category, issues of effectiveness, efficiency, equity, transparency, and that's a 2-1-4. Things can cut one. The budget must promote these principles. So if the budget leads to credible plans, credible strategic plans and other performance plans, we have a big problem, Chair. We have a big problem around this area about the budget being linked to credible plans. It's a point that I need to emphasize. When you look at the annual report, when it tables the annual report and annual financial statement, they always say departments fail to achieve performance targets because the indicators and targets that they could, they set themselves in the beginning, they were not marked, they were not specific, they were not measurable, they were not achievable, they were not time-bound, they were not reliable. Now, the conundrum that we have here is that annual reports are tabled and then referred to portfolio committees and payment direct committees, and not this committee, but we approve the budget. You know, the budget must be informed by then, there must be an alignment. Now, portfolio committees approve this budget, and we are not involved. I think that's what the process involves. That's what needs to happen at some point. We must find a way of getting involved in the approval of annual performance plan. Because maybe I said the annual performance plan target are not really aligned to the budget as well. Here on the other side, we approve the appropriation bill without looking at the annual performance plan. And there is a gap. Definitely, you see that throughout the financial year, one department now are struggling to implement projects. End of the year, agencies. The budget spent, the department spent 100% of the budget, but achieved only 50% of the target. Now we're asking ourselves, how come? Where did the money go? Is there any for money? So that gap, you know. So when we had an engagement in Uganda, In Uganda, what they said they do, they said because we never said from the meeting. The portfolio committee during the budget, during the budget period, they collapsed and joined the appropriations committee because they have the knowledge of that's when you even consider the strategic plan alongside with the budget. So the committee becomes big during the budget process so that you are able to consider the budget at the same time the strategic plan. So we have the sectoral input and the budgetary input in the process. That's what they said they do. But I don't know, I think as we go along, but it's a huge problem that we have because the committee has got little time as well to do all the analysis and so on. But it's something that you must think about. So, and then another question is, does past performance justify current allocation? Because there's no use the department consistently underspends significantly and keeps on getting the budget that is increased and it underperforms increased. The issue that the chairperson raised yesterday. We go in for money and this one is underspent, but we need to repay this debt with interest. How does it work, you know? So it's very important when we engage with treasury because there must be, because in the past we had a project, I think it was called RAS 112 call center. I think it was in the Department of Communication. Oh, boy! We even said that this budget is, this program is sort of a, what should we call it? But that you are dumping funds there that you know you're not going to use. You want, you go to trade and say, no, we're going to implement this project. But you know, you can't the adjustment period to take these funds and put somewhere, especially to non-significant areas. So projects and programs that are not performing, why do we keep on funding? Because it means maybe I'm not important.
That's the piggy bank. Oh yes, something like that. So those are issues every go along. And that allocation responds to issues raised by Parliament in the past. Yeah, Transcopa was complaining about so many resolutions, but nothing happened. The new departments get more money year in, year out, really. So there's no consequence management. Can we use budget to enforce consequence management? Obviously, there are moral issues as well. Are you punishing the people? Because if you don't provide money to this water-related program, who suffers? Is it the DCE who is not making sure that the department performs well, or the people are waiting for water? Because if you withhold money, they are withholding, they are withholding things to the people. So it becomes a moral dilemma there. But we have to find a way. But the issue of consequence management, we have to rely on when we talk about issues in the state of things to talk about. We will highlight those issues. And that is their value for money. Not just the department was said this is, we are not accountable. We can't say because the department spent 100%. What did it do with that money? You know, can people come and assess and say yes, this program is a help us. That's why it's very important to come to the people. Even though for that oversight. Sometimes you can't treat when you only speak to the department. Because the department will tell you what will be favorable to them. But the people outside say, but we still don't have this and that, but you allocate it. So that's why you discuss the issues of value for money, I think especially oversight basis. That's why Parliament focuses on that. And then to spending outcomes match the achievement of targets. The mismatch with raising the high cost. Is there equity with the need of revenue? The issue of providing municipality that has only deal with the need of revenue scrapping with that technology, because the criticism that has been made against treasury that they use formulas that really do not have sometimes the human factor. You know, rural provinces, when they say, no, we do not have also the problem, we must hold in mind, so rural provinces are the treated special. You know, they've got so much backlog and so on. So when you put together this formula, all those issues, members must do that, because members are elected to represent the people. For them, as I say, the budget to members, not just about the numbers and formulas, it's about the people. And then this last one, I think this is my last slide. It looks a little bit technical, but it's something that will come up as members engage with other stakeholders later in the day. It's just the unfolding of the budget process in Parliament as informed by the key sections in the Management Act. It is what is called the budget review and recommendation report of the HRR. It's informed by Section 5 of the Management Act, and it happens around September and October. This is when, but it's not our role, but what comes out of it becomes an interest to the committee. This is when the portfolio committees review the annual performance of national departments, each national department, both financial and non-financial performance. And then they make recommendations based on what comes out of their review. And then those recommendations could be policy related, could be budget related. And then if it is policy related, and then once it's tabled to Parliament, through the process of Parliament, those specific recommendations must go to the relevant minister. The ones that relate to the budget must go to the Minister of Finance and so on. This happens before the MCGCS. So we also use, you know, we go through this report that that's the role of the support staff, because when we have a portfolio control report, because they review each department, we go and look at them and look at the ones that have called budget modifications, because we are the custodian of the budget as far as appropriation is concerned. Because they make recommendations on the forward allocation of resources. This program is not performing, as the portfolio committee will say,
the Minister of Finance next year must not allocate more money to this project because it has not been performing because of 1, 2, 3. So in the spirit of collaboration, we must be aware of what they are recommending. Also, so that we don't recommend two different things, you know. So we use that also when we engage with business traders in the next session, which is on the NCPTS. What for the committee said this, and what are you saying? And by law, the minister must respond to this recommendation when they table the budget in the following year. We got the recommendation of this and that, and then we take into account, this is how we expect this. When they did not take into account, they must say, no, we did not take into account because of funds. And then MCPTS said it happened in October, and then after the MCPTS, because the MCPTS in the process prior to the introduction of the budget of the following year, and then the introduction of the budget, and then as I think it's something that I indicated later, the fiscal framework, that's what must be adopted in February after the introduction of the budget, and it must be adopted 15 days after the introduction of the budget, and then it's the DORA, the following we come in 35 days after the introduction of the fiscal framework. But the most important thing, this will help you, Chair President, honorable members, when you read the division of 23, the Money Bill Act, because that should be your guidance. It guides the work of this committee. So this illustration will help you when you navigate the Money Bill Act. I've just summarized the key section of the Act in terms of the process. The most important section that is working is the PBO, which is established in 10 years. 15 of the Money Bill Act, but I think they will talk about that when they come later. And that will be the end of this presentation. But in closing, again, quote unquote, Chair and members, I always say budgets are not made up of members, it's just about the people. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much. One of the members will note their comments and questions because the presentation that we have later. Please, next. Section 42 of the Constitution speaks to the composition of Parliament.
And it says the parliament consists of National Assembly and the International Council of Provinces. Given the fact that our committee is a National Assembly committee, the presentation will mainly focus on how the NA rules affect the operation of the Section 44 of the Constitution has the national legislative authority in Parliament, and from which subsection 1A confers the specific powers of this committee to the National Assembly. Now, section 57 of the Constitution gives the right to each House of Parliament to determine its own internal arrangements, proceedings, and procedures. That's where your rules committee comes in. Now, the APC dated 11 June 2019, the rules committee reported in terms of rule 237, determine the composition of the Standing Committee on Appropriations as follows. We've got 6 ANC members, 2 VA, 1 EFF, and 2 from the other parties. The EFF has 1 alternate, and the ANC has 1 alternate. And then Musa also spoke about the rest of the legislative committees in terms of rule 150. The Standing Committee for Appropriation is established in terms of rule 236, and it's established in terms of the money bills, amendment procedure, and relative matters. The NL rules 171 to 180 speak about the rules applicable to subcommittees, but I'm not going to touch on that because we don't have a subcommittee in our committee. And then rule 225 speaks about the establishment of portfolio committees. We are not a portfolio committee, so the chairperson's commission, I will skip that one as well. Now rule 154 says that parties are entitled to be represented in committees in substantially the same proportion as the in which they are represented in the assembly. Yeah. That's where your 6 AMC members, your 2 DA, 1 EFF, and 2 from other parties come in. That just gives effect to this rule. Now, rule 167 outlines the general powers of National Assembly committees. The powers are as follows. Committee may summon any person to appear before it or to give evidence on oath or affirmation or to produce documents. Now our committee hasn't summoned anybody. We invite, they accept the invitation and come. Summons is something totally different. They have to consult with the speaker must give permission. It's not easy to summon somebody. And then to receive petitions, representations, or submissions from interested persons or institutions. In our case, Equal Education, Equal Education, they petitioned us, they asked us if we can come and bring the committee on the issues, the challenges related to the scholar transport program as administered by the Department of Basic Education. We listened to them and they gave us some good inputs which were ultimately factored into our report. I think it was 2017 NPDPS report, medium term budget policy report. Committee can also permit oral evidence, contributions, representations, submissions, and any other method before the committee conduct public hearings. In our case, members will see that on the program we settled the public hearings on the 2019 appropriation law for 16 July 2019, but the closing date for submission is being 12 July. Now, this is very important, because some committees have been challenged before. They threatened to take the president to court if he sends to the Malone House due to insufficient public hearings taking place. So they argue that the public wasn't given sufficient time, etc., to give comments. So we are trying to avoid all of those issues. In fact, we were also questioned at some stage where we placed our advertisements, we published the communications, that's now the communications person, placed the advertisement on Parliament website, on social media, etc. But that was just some form of a tactic to try and get us to off track, because we were very pressed for time. We were given strict instructions to finalize, and we managed to sort it out. The committeeman also consult any assembly or council committee. Consult any assembly or council committee or subcommittee on any joint committee or subcommittee. Yesterday we had a joint meeting. We try and, especially when we have our hearings on the expenditure reports, we try and invite portfolio committees, as I've been in the past, we try and invite portfolio committees. Because, as Musa indicated, they have more information related to the policy issues, the performance. We focus a little bit more on the expenditure side, but when we look at value for money, we need to consider the performance side as well, because there's this issue of the disjunction between the expenditure and the performance. As Musa said, you have 99% expenditure, but 50% of targets have been achieved. Also, when we deal with the appropriation bill, where in which we have our 4 months, we basically have our second term of a calendar year in which we process the appropriation bill. We try and invite other portfolio committees, especially if they indicated some challenges related to the budget allocations of respective departments, but to date, it hasn't been easy. Ideally, we would like to have each and every committee consulting our committee on their challenges related to budget allocation, so that we can, when we deal with the appropriation bill, we can try and either amend the bill or we good recommendations that these issues must be considered during the adjustment budget process. Time has always been a challenge for our committee, because when we deal with appropriations, the portfolio committees are busy dealing with the budget vote of their respective departments. Some portfolio committees have a whole lot of entities reporting to them, so they will have 2 weeks in which they get briefings, etc., from the department and the affected entities, and then they have to do the budget vote, the EPCs on the budget votes. So time has always been a challenge for us. And then the committee can determine its own working arrangements. Now, how we determine our own arrangements is when we do our program. The support staff will draw up a draft program. We consult with the chairperson and the work, and before tabling the draft program before the committee. Now, in the program, we try and anticipate whatever is going to come. This term's program is very short, straightforward. We just need to process the appropriation during the meetings. But you'll see in the next program, the third term program, there's going to be a whole lot more activities taking place. And this is where the committee must decide now how often are we going to meet. Third Parliament, on average, we met 3 times a week. The committee didn't have a problem with that.
I don't know about the new committee. Committee must decide. Are we meeting Fridays? Because Tuesday and Wednesday, our committee can meet at any time because we have overarching mandate. So we can call whoever we want. We don't fall under clusters. Yeah, and then our program obviously needs to speak to the provisions contained in the Money Bills Act. So our program will, as far as possible, try to deal with the mandate as outlined in the Money Bills Act. Your expenditure reports, and then the processing of budget. As an overview for the year, first term we deal with the budget is stable. We wait for fiscal framework to be adopted by the finance and the select committee on the finance committee in the NA and NGOP. Thereafter, we have our few briefings on division of revenue law, and then at the end of the term. Second term, appropriations bill is referred, based on the appropriations bill throughout. So third term is basically the term where we have enough time to call departments on expenditure. Then we table our report to the National Assembly, and then fourth term, MDBPS is tabled, so we have to focus on MDBPS. So what we used to do in the past, when we call the department for either appropriation bill or assessments appropriation bill, we ask them to brief us on their expenditure outcomes as well, depending on which term we are in. So for appropriation for my budget, we say, come, please explain, give us an overview of your expenditure and explain the reasons for all the variances and motivate why we must adopt your allocation as contained in the program. That's how we try and deal with the expenditure side, because honestly speaking, only the third term is there, because the other three terms is legislated, we have to deal with the budget instruments. The committee can also determine the venue meeting. We usually meet in Parliament. However, there are instances where, due to a lack of venues in Parliament, there are instances where we have to meet outside. I'm just sensitizing members to that, but we try and keep it as close as possible to Parliament so that it doesn't become cumbersome exercise. And then, this one, I think I must just sensitize the committee to this one. We've experienced challenges last year, especially last year, wherein we submitted our program to the House Chairperson. It was approved, but when we went looking for venues, all the venues were taken. Now we are busy dealing with legislation, we are dealing with the budget. Do we really want to go and meet outside at the townhouse hotel or the Taj hotel where they don't have the cameras, etc., where people on outside can watch what we are doing? Do we really want that? And open ourselves up to scrutiny and public saying, well, you guys, you process the budget there in some corner there, we don't even know what happened. So we just need to look at that and maybe ask the chairperson to have a word, because I know SCOPA, they're not a portfolio committee. When the key areas are distributed, the areas, focus areas for the portfolio committees are distributed by the House Chairperson. It mainly deals with issues related to portfolio committees. Now we are not a portfolio committee. We have our own issues. Do we really want to take our budget processes, meet outside, into DPS table, we go outside, it's difficult. Public wants to come. Townhouse Hotel will charge you 40,000 just for the members. And the invited stakeholders, now people from the public, they come because the meetings are on the set list, they come, 10, 20 more people come, they have problems. Management will call me and say, hey brother, you said there were going to be 40 people, now we've got 60 people, what's going on? So those are the administrative challenges, but I believe that with the help of the chairperson, we can try and address it, because it's something that really we shouldn't be worried about as a board staff when we're dealing with the budget. Committee can meet on any day and at any time, including days which are not working days, when the assembly is sitting and during recess. That is not a norm. We try and avoid this as far as possible. We try and meet on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. But there are extraordinary circumstances, especially if the program has been approved by the Joint Programming Committee. They'll say, we want to debate the appropriation bill on a Tuesday. We've got public hearing scheduled for the Friday. Then we only have the Monday to issue a top-down report. There are times when they agree, okay, right, we shift it to the Wednesday or the Thursday, and there are times when it becomes a problem. I'm just trying to sensitize members that this is a different, when we deal with budget, it's a totally different animal, because if the programming committee says, that's the debate and that, we have to play to that tune, because we have public hearings, we have to give the public sufficient time in which to give their comments and their submissions. Some of them want to come and make oral presentations, we have to allow for that. And we have to meet on a Monday. It happened in first parliament, it happened, I don't know, maybe 5 times in first parliament that we had to meet on a Monday to adopt our reports. There was one meeting during MDBBS where we were sitting in a committee until 9:30, 10:00 to adopt the report, and the report is being debated the following day. So I'm just sensitizing members. The committee can also exercise other powers assigned to it by the constitution, legislation, in this case the Manuals Act, to the provision of these rules or resolutions of the assembly. The election of chairperson, with your permission, I'll skip that one, we've already done that on Tuesday. There's just one thing, if the chairperson is absent or unable to perform his duties, we have to elect an acting chairperson, and we'll just follow the same process that we did on Tuesday. We hope that's not going to be the case here, because we have to do it whenever the chairperson is not available. Attendance of committee members in the meetings. In the Rule 185 says a member of the assembly who is not a member of the committee may be present at the meeting of the committee. A question was raised on Tuesday. What are the other EFF members doing here? There's the answer. They are allowed to come and they are allowed to participate. However, they can't take decisions. And then there's a Rule 38 where it speaks about the absence of members from meetings, and then there's sanctions for members for extended and authorized absence from meetings, and then members can appeal against those sections. Those ones, it never happened in our committee. I don't know. I don't think we should. It's not going to happen in our committee. Quorum requirements. Quorum requirements, very important. So
I think it's just to say that absent should be reported.
Yeah.
Apology should be written. And then should be written. Just tell us about this.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And then you see or she see.
Yeah. That's the practice. The rule says that that member must report to his or her political party and give an apology. But an apology will suffice. I'm not going to report to you you are absent from more than 3 meetings. Because and it's going to be uncomfortable for me to do such a thing. As I'm saying, I have confidence in the members. They will attend our meetings. If there's a reason, I don't know how many of our members are also permanent members in other committees. Because in the legacy report, we stated that the Parliament must try as far as possible to avoid putting permanent members here, but then that member must, is a permanent member somewhere else as well. I know it's difficult for the smaller parties because of number issues, but because of the business that we are dealing with, it becomes problematic when we have to adopt the reports and stuff and members have to attend other meetings. I don't know how many. I know that the AMC members, the six members are all permanent and there's one alternate and there's a permanent PSF member. Other one is alternate, so that's covered. There's one member from IFP. I don't think that member is going to attend our meetings because it's related to a chairperson in another committee. And then there's another member from UDM. That member has sent his apologies for the committee. He gave his apologies for all the meetings. Quorum requirement, the committee requires at least one third of its members to commence with a meeting. That's four members. So if we are not going to take any decisions, we are receiving a briefing, we have four members, we can carry on. Some other committees, is that the chairperson in the book, they carry on. These people came from Victoria to come and join us, we are not going to say them there because our members are not here. So, but the rule says that we need one third. And if at any time one of those four members leave, then chairperson must join and wait for this person to come. But that's not, we're not going to have that problem in our committee. And then when a decision is taken, majority of the members must be present. An alternate member may vote if one of the permanent members is not present. And then if the committee has to decide a question and a quorum is not present, the chairperson may suspend until a quorum is present or adjourn the meeting. Or the chairperson can go off a member from, for instance, if EFF members are not around. The EFF members are not around and two or three of the ANC members are not around for various reasons. Chairperson has the power to go up, just go outside, check corridor, come in chief, just sign the register and say yes and then we are talking report. So chairperson has the power, but it must be an EFF member if the EFF members are not here and then it's for the same applies to the ANC, IFP, UDM.
Yeah.
Rule 156 speaks to the alternates. I've touched on that. I've touched on the co-option of members and the alternates and permanent members from the town. So the chairperson's permission, I'll skip that one. And then section 59 of the constitution and the inner rule 170 speaks about public involvement. This one is very important. The public involvement. So what we usually do if we see the public is not invested in this way, we identify stakeholders. We table it, for instance, we'll ask, okay, members, we didn't receive anything, however, this is an important matter. We did this with SAA, we did it with post office, we did it with the other one, SA Express. We call the experts. We ask Osaki to comment. We ask other justice coalition. We ask, even ask universities to comment. Some of them come. We ask business leaders of South Africa, business unity South Africa, please come and comment. We really want to know what you think about this particular book because it is sensitive. Now, we don't want people to go run to the media and complain, Parliament approved this thing, but when we ask you to come and give your inputs, let's hear what you have to say, you decline. So we try to reach as many stakeholders as possible. We used to just send the advertisement to all the external stakeholders and say, please, if you want to comment, you are welcome. Public hearing will be open this day. You need to submit your submission by that day. And it worked. It added value to the discussions and end of the day the bill is approved, it's is adopted, it's at that solid time.
Close meetings.
That is also one of the sensitive issues, and we try and avoid them only in very exceptional circumstances. But the chairperson may close a meeting if the matter which is being considered is of a private nature, is prejudicial to a particular person, protected under parliamentary privilege, or any other reason, privilege in terms of law, is confidential in terms of legislation. I don't think we had an issue with this one before, because the committee, we deal with budget, we try and be as transparent as possible. In terms of legislation, now, as Musa said, we mainly deal with Section 76 and Section 77 laws. 77 bills are bills like your appropriation bill, where we have more time to process. Section 76, division of revenue. We don't have enough time, so it's a shorter report. And then in the processing of an inquiry into the bill, committee might have informal discussion on principles and subject of the bill, briefing by department concerned, consideration of public comments. In terms of our appropriation bill, we already received our briefing from our National Treasury. Now the next step, we've already called for submission from the public. Next step is to adopt the motion of desirability. The motion of desirability is just where the committee agrees on the principles of the bill. Not the committee won't agree on each and every clause. The committee says, yeah, we need to process this bill basically, and then we carry on. And the committee can only report on a bill after it's been there. That has been a challenge in the past, but I hope we are not going to do that, because the taking is done somewhere else. Taking is done in legal services and deciding
what that taking
means. Sorry, sir?
What does taking mean?
Taking is where when a bill is tabled, it's tabled as a proposal. It's tabled as a proposal. Mm-hmm. You see at the bottom, proposed Section 77. Members, look at the appropriation bill. It says appropriation bill on top, in the middle, proposed Section 77. Now the taking mechanism, in consultation with legal services, will just confirm whether the taking is correct. Taking is correct, we can report on the bill. But there have been instances where the taking hasn't been done, and the debate is taking place tomorrow, and we are sitting here, we have to adopt a report, and the one presiding officer is in Eastern Cape, the other one is overseas, and we are sitting on the problem. So, but these are things that myself and my unit manager, we try and avoid it. We indicate to the relevant people in the table, guys, we are adopting on this day, please. I haven't seen the tagging, because the tagging has to be ATC in order for it to be official. So, that's not one that the members concern themselves about. In terms of reporting, the committee must formally adopt the report, move, second, abstain, reserve the right on the bill, etc. And then it will be submitted to the National Assembly. And then the chairperson, usually the chairperson will introduce the report, or the chairperson will designate as it is fit. When dealing with legislation, the committee, after the bill has been referred, it must be agreed upon through high majority. And then the report, after the taking, is classified the bill. It must state the classification of the bill. It must clearly state whether the committee recommends the approval or the rejection of the bill.
In a case where bill is introduced by a member in his or her individual capacity, committee must state its views on the bill. It must specify each amendment. And it must specify each amendment that was rejected by the committee. Those are the real issues for the committee members to concern themselves about. So I'll just keep all of those. The other matters, chairperson, is Rule 342 speaks about international agreements. That is not applicable to our committee because we don't do international agreements. Rule 344 speaks about petitions. We've never received formal petitions in the true sense of the word, so it's not really applicable. As I said earlier, you have some stakeholders who come and ask, is it possible for us to brief the committee on ABC? That's not a petition. The petition is formally tabled, it's ATC by the speaker, and then the committee must deal with it and it must respond on it. So we've never had one of those. The Chapter 9 institution, our main one is FFC. They will come in the afternoon. And our second one we usually call for submission on the budget is the Public Service Commission. FFC, we have to consider the recommendations of the FFC in terms of the division of revenue. FFC usually tables before the end of May. They table their recommendations for the division of revenue for the following financial year. And then we have to consider it, but we don't have to report on it. And then statutory appointments, our only statutory appointment relates to the director of the Parliamentary Budget Office. That position is currently vacant, it will probably come in the next term, and where we have to confer with the other three committees and then report it out on our preferred candidate. That brings me to the end of my presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Gary. Can you take a short break just to stretch? The time is being up. Can you say 5 minutes? Thank you.
Of course.